Hi guys, welcome back to the first podcast of the 1899. We plan to do these at least every week after every game. And today I'm joined by Tom to discuss a very comprehensive 5-0 victory, Barcelona over Elche, and a lot more in the market. Hey Tom, how's it going, mate?
Not bad, thanks, Neil. Just surviving what's left of the summer here in Catalonia. But yeah, really happy that Barca and La Liga are both back.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I suppose we should start with the game. There are lots of talking points left to touch on. 5-0. I mean, look, I'll just say I thought the first half was expectedly a little bit not quite at our best. I think, obviously, when you saw the 11, lots of players missing, lots of players probably not at 100%, including the likes of Lamine, Pedri, Kubasi, who barely played, and a lot more. But I think as the game progressed in the second half, I thought we came out and we played some really good football. I thought it also showed the likes of Adeyemi and Gordon can be so important, so valuable. And in general, I thought it showed that Barcelona can outscore essentially anyone in this league pretty easily. But I want to first start more generally. How did you see the game and what did you sort of note?
Yeah, I do agree, Neil. I thought the first half, or the first portion of the first half, let's say, was really disjointed, a lot of misplaced passing, especially from Bernal and Gavi. But like you said, factors such as it being the first game of the season, maybe people still a bit rusty from the holidays, from maybe playing the World Cup. But I do think that, you know, they did settle into the game and there were some really top individual performances. And Joan Garcia, he went back to Barcelona with a clean sheet. But I agree with you again. I think it might be a case that, you know, if you score four, we'll score five, as we've seen with Flick's teams before.
Yeah, I think this year more than ever as well. Like, you know, last season, we obviously scored a lot of goals, but I think you'd be able to agree that every time sort of Rafinha wasn't around or Lamine wasn't at 100%, the side generally took a big hit in terms of its productivity and intensity. But now, you know, we saw Adeyemi start yesterday. We saw Gordon come on and get two really nice assists as well. I think that attacking firepower has already gone up from a level that was already, you know, excellent to now, I think, the best it's been in a very long time, and certainly the best it's been under Flick. And a lot of the discourse around Barcelona is surrounded around the striker situation, you know, Julian, who's going to come in. But I think what's overlooked is how much we've already improved the front line. And Gordon and Adeyemi, for me, were very important signings. And most people sort of didn't look at them straight away and sort of think that, you know, these will be difference makers for Barcelona. But in a different way, because a Hansi Flick system is so intense, it demands so much. It's almost impossible for Rafinha to play every game or for Lamine to be at his best in every game. And I think these signings come in and make sure that even if Rafinha isn't having his best game or isn't available, our general attacking productivity remains top tier.
Yeah, entirely. You know, Culés are still stressing with, you know, little over a week to go on the transfer market. Some people are, you know, really getting anxiety about this striker situation. You can understand it, obviously, with Ferran Torres and Lewandowski both leaving. There is no other natural nine apart from Hamza, and you've got to, you know, it's right to question whether, you know, he's got what it takes to immediately become a Barca number nine at 18 years old. But Adeyemi and Gordon have made an instant impact. I thought they were impressive in Basel and alongside Rafinha as well in a front three. They don't all start together last night. Flick rightly praised Rafinha for what was a fantastic captain's performance with two goals and an assist, and he praised his intensity. And you're right, Neil, the intensity that he brings can be matched by Adeyemi and Gordon. Gordon came on in the second half and Adeyemi went off. I believe Lamine also went off and Olmo came on with Gordon. But it was almost like a like-for-like replacement in terms of speed. Again, you know, using the word intensity, and Gordon delivered two assists in not many more minutes, I think.
Well, Tom, I kind of, on this point, I wanted to sort of pose a question to you. You know, we've seen PSG, for example, win win two Champions Leagues in a row with a very flexible, mobile, adaptable front line. Dembele almost never played at striker before in his career, and he went to PSG and he thrived, won a Ballon d'Or playing in a very free role. And yesterday, we saw Rafinha play a very similar role. He dropped deep, he linked up the play, he sort of had the freedom to both attack the spaces in behind, but also operate sort of deeper back as a false nine. And he was excellent. Now, of course, I do think the caveat here is that Elche are a very aggressive side. They give you a lot of space, lots of space to run into, lots of space in the midfield. And a lot of La Liga sides aren't like that. So I think when you're playing low blocks, you know, that there are certain question marks. But do you think that Barcelona can have a very productive season and can thrive if they don't sign a nine? If they continue on with what they have right now and Rafinha sort of grows into a Dembele role like we see at PSG?
I do, and I already saw shouts on Barca X, Barca Twitter, or whatever you want to call it, you know, that Rafinha's already started his campaign for a Ballon d'Or, you know, a Ballon d'Or winning season. Some felt that he should have won it maybe in 2024-25. But to answer your question more directly, I really don't see this obsession with Barca needing any old number nine if they don't manage to land Julian Alvarez. I think the money would be better off saved until maybe a bigger name is available next summer, or it can be spent on other positions, such as I think we're going to get back onto the left back. To the left back situation, and you know, maybe another centre back. I think Rafinha's got what it takes. I think he played better last night than he did at Basel, maybe finding his feet. But, you know, I think he can do it all on the front line. I think those, if they all play together, obviously we've got to consider Lamine as well. But in games, maybe when they do play together, or there's at least two out of the three playing together, I think Adeyemi, Rafinha and Gordon can all interchange so that one of them's the central nine at some point and really confuse defences with the movement, again, speed and intensity.
Yeah, and I think that's a very valid question. I sort of tweeted this earlier today, and for me, looking at this Barcelona side, right, I look at the front line, I look at the system, especially how potent it is, and I don't think goals are ever going to be a problem. You know, what Flick has created is so dynamic, so intense. I think the fundamentals to score a lot of goals are going to be there with or without a striker. But I look at the back line. I mean, we've spoken about Balde's situation at left back and also the centre-back situation because, look, I like Gerard Martin. I think Martin has really grown into his role at Barcelona. But if we're looking at, like, those elite centre-backs, if we're looking at your Arsenals, your Bayerns, even Madrid to an extent, maybe with Konate and the experience they have, I would say that Barcelona's Kubasi partner just isn't up to that elite of the elite mark. And if you look at Christensen, he's so unreliable with his injury issues. He's barely played in the last 2 years. Eric Garcia is going to be very important at right back. Koundé's had a shaky 18 months and hasn't played at centre back for a long time. I think, as you were saying and suggesting, maybe instead of going all out and signing any old nine, since Julian's looking very unlikely, I think actually trying to find a truly elite centre back would raise our ceilings more than signing, let's say, just a random striker. And I think that's something the club should really consider in these next few days.
Yeah, like, as we've already said, there's about a week to spare, and I think the focus will be on trying to convince Atletico Madrid to maybe sell Julian, a left back and possibly a centre back, but you know, it's got to be the right fit, and it's got to be the right price. I think we've been spoiled this summer by just how much money Barcelona have been able to spend. It's a pretty alien feeling, not seen since 2022 when Joan Laporta pulled the famous economic levers, and it just came out of nowhere. You know, this spending spree starting with Gordon just before the World Cup. And I think that was a stroke of genius from Deco, because it's really interesting that there were a lot of protests against that Gordon signing, I think, by you know, swathes of the Barca fan base. especially with his price tag. I think it was it 70 million euros plus 10 million more in add-on. And then as the World Cup progressed, he had a fantastic campaign with England, obviously scored in the semi-final as well, that England lost to Argentina. His stock really rose. And then, yeah, through pre-season and last night, he's really impressed.
I mean, you look at the price tags after the World Cup, the likes of Morgan Rogers go for 140 million euros, the likes of Yander Monde go for 130 million euros. So when you put Gordon into the framework or the context of certain prices of left-wingers who I believe are of a similar quality, I think the best thing Barcelona did was sign him at a time where the World Cup hype just wasn't there yet, because he did go on have a very good World Cup as well. I think we would have potentially had to pay an extra 20-30 million if he was signed after the World Cup. But on these sort of new faces, I think one name we have to talk about who's a new face but not a new signing is Xavi Espart. Because for me, mate, I thought he was probably our most promising player during preseason. He played in the midfield. He looked incredible alongside Bernal in those preseason games. We saw him last year break through as a right back. He didn't play much, but we saw him break through, and we knew Flick's always been a big fan. And then yesterday, he goes into this game with whatever is going on with Balde. So we desperately need a left back. And he was absolutely incredible. I mean, for me, one of our best players, no doubt. And we always associate Espart with what he does on the ball, right? But I thought he was so incredibly smart, clever, and aggressive defensively. He won most of his duels both on the ground and aerially. And he proved that he is so game to do the job no matter where Flick needs him. He's one of those Swiss Army knife players that Flick really likes. We know he really likes Eric Garcia, Rafinha, those versatile footballers. And Espart, again, has come in and proven that he is ready already to be a part of this squad and do so really well.
Yeah, it was a fantastic performance from Espart. Before the game, one of ESPN's correspondents, he posted on Twitter he made sure he put it in block capitals, a possible Barca first 11. I'm not really sure if he'd heard that, you know, from his sources, or it was just a really educated guess on his behalf. And the way he put the lineup, he obviously had Eric and Espart on different defensive flanks, but you kind of had to guess the rest as to which flank he'd put Espart on. But then if you looked at Lamine in his lineup, it kind of suggested that that Eric would be on the right and Espart was on the left, but still people were guessing about that. And obviously as the game started, we saw that Espart was indeed at left back. And I think, yeah, it was a bit of a jittery opening 10-20 minutes from everybody playing for that Barca team. And I think that Gavi, even though his passing was a bit erratic along with Bernal, he did a really good job of sort of covering for Espart when Espart was pushing up and maybe I think finding his feet positioning wise. But as the game progressed, just like, you know, any young player that's tipped for really big things like Espart is, and he's proving that, you know, maybe he does have a future in his first team. If he carries on in this manner, he definitely will. He just grew into the game, and once he had his positioning correct, he had a really fine balance in, you know, knowing when to be aggressive, when to hold back, when to attack. And like you say, he really mucked in defensively. I think it was 6 clearances, a couple of interceptions. And as you said, as one of the shortest guys on the pitch, he won all of his aerial duels and the vast majority of his duels on the ground as well. Flick praised him post-match. It's obvious that he's a fan of him. There's been comparisons to Philip Lahm. Seen him in midfield this pre-season. And he's just proving, like Eric, as you said, that he can be Flick's, another of Flick's Swiss Army knives, that he can trust to play a number of positions when there are injuries or when there are issues ongoing, as we've seen with Balde.
Now, I will say, we both know how good this midfield is right now. For me, Barcelona maybe have the best midfield in the world alongside PSG. You look at the quality, you look at the depth, it's incredible. So for someone like Espart to break into the midfield is very difficult unless he is adaptable. And that's exactly what he is. You know, we've seen him do the job essentially in three positions now and do so really well. I think the key to thrive as a young player in this Hansi Flick system is that ability and willingness to play in multiple positions, to essentially put your head down and do what the coach asks of you. And Espart sort of personifies that for a young player as well. I do think that in the midfield, we see that when Pedri isn't there, and Rodri, of course, isn't there, Barcelona do have a lack of controllers, of players who can take the game by the scruff of the neck and pass the ball around. I think in those opening 15, 20 minutes, as you reference, we did look a little bit short. We looked like we couldn't really get the ball off Elche. And I think at one point, I think 25 minutes into the game, they actually had more possession than Barcelona. Of course, that was a byproduct of having both Pedri and Rodri out. And then the moment Pedri came on in the 40th minute, I think the change was so obvious. You know, we suddenly got more of the ball. We suddenly created more chances. And even though this is a Pedri who I would say is not at 100%, you know, he's just come back from the World Cup. He hasn't had a proper preseason, didn't start a single game in preseason. But the quality, the calmness, the composure, the pauser he brings, I think is still so, so valuable. And in addition to that, I think it's also valuable now that we have Rodri, who can essentially ease the burden off Pedri, because we've seen it time and time again since Pedri's joined Barcelona. Every time he's out of the squad, he's either dragged back in too early because we miss him so much, or he's overworked to the point of picking up recurring injuries. So I think now having that balance between Pedri, Rodri, and potentially even Espart, because I believe Espart is stylistically a better controller than both Gavi and Barnell right now. I think the midfield sort of depth now is on another level, and Pedri is at the centre of all of that.
Yeah, Pedri's impact, as you said, it was instant. The all-important pauser, like you mentioned, just knowing when the right time is to slow things down, to put his foot on the gas. And it sounds like a really, you know, easy reach, you know, talking about Pedri and his passing, but playing with some new teammates like Adeyemi and Gordon, just some of the passes he put in behind the defence, I think, you know, it's just, if they can play the offside trap, you know, correctly, yeah, cleverly, some of the passes he was putting in behind the defence for them to run on. But then we also saw that with Xavi Espart as well from right back. So I think you're correct, Neil. I think we're going to be spoiled watching this Barca midfield. It's arguably one of the hardest to break into to earn minutes. Yep. That's why we've seen youngsters like Tommy Marquez, Ed Altabraga. It's why, you know, the Casado is probably on his way soon. But with the options they've got, I think you're right in saying that Rodri is also going to take a lot of the burden off Pedri. Rotating the midfielders is going to be a lot more straightforward, knowing the right time to rest Pedri, which I think wasn't always handled well last season, or as well as it could have been, especially with some La Liga matches where I think Pedri could have sat out. And I think also rotating Rodri himself is going to be important as well. I think not putting too much of a burden on either man.
Yeah.
But also maybe where the Spain national team didn't, obviously they won the tournament and you know, deservedly so, but we saw that maybe De La Fuente didn't like what he saw from Pedri and Rodri playing together. And as the tournament progressed, Pedri eventually lost his place to Fabian Ruiz. So it's also on Flick to find a way of them playing together, and also for Pedri and Rodri to gel, which is to the benefit of the club and perhaps the Spain national team as well.
I will also say, like, I don't know if you saw this, but yesterday I watched the post-match interview from Anthony Gordon, and you know, they just asked him about, you know, how he's settling in and how he sees the squad. And he was so ecstatic. He made this point. He said, look, when I'm playing with players like Pedri, all I have to do is run and they will find me. And I think that's so fitting. Like, we talk about the attack, we talk about the midfield, but at the end of the day, it's about how they come together and as a cohesive unit. And I think having the runners we have now with creators like Pedri, like Rodri, like Lamine, like Firmin, I think it just takes this side to a new level. And that balance I don't think is something we've always had, the balance and the depth. But now I think what Flick and Deco have created is a very good blend of runners, of creators, and that is coming to the show. And I do think that Hamza as well could have an important role to play. His profile is sort of a box threat, someone who can essentially camp in the box and score those headers. We saw Luke de Jong do it for Barcelona. We're seeing Carlos Espi do it now for Madrid. I think Hamza could come in and be a similar profile. So I think the point here is I look at this squad and there aren't many profiles we lack going forward. I would say almost all the boxes are ticked over there. But it's also true that there are perhaps a few problems. You know, we saw Lamine yesterday be a little bit grumpy, be a little bit annoyed at coming off early. I don't want to read too much into this because, look, the best players are always very competitive. The best players always want to play every minute of every game. But I think it's also more a reflection of Lamine perhaps not being at his best for a little while now, and he really wants to get in on the action. You know, so many goals yesterday. He wasn't a part of them. So I think it's more about Lamine being critical of his own performances than it is about him perhaps having a problem with being subbed off or showing a certain attitude towards Flick. But that's just my reading of it. Of course, we can speculate further.
Yeah, I don't want to get too gossipy either. I've seen a few things on X, on Twitter, you know, about maybe Lamine having a bit of a sulk because three of his closest friends, Casado, Baldi and Hector Fort, all look to be on the way out of the club. And I've seen that Lamine's going to have to, you know, take it on the chin, and it's not going to be a club de amigos, a friend's club like Messi arguably had at Barca, you know, with his closest confidant staying at Camp Nou. I'll go for that instead, Neil, that, you know, any sulking on the bench was about his own performance, about how high his personal standards are. He wouldn't have gotten as far as he has at such a young age in his career. You know, just talent alone's not enough without having that drive as well. He's not been well since the injury, I think, and obviously had to feature for Spain at the World Cup. He's, you know, arguably the star player alongside Rodri. He had to play a part. I don't think he was at his best as we saw in the club season. He's obviously got work ahead to you know, get back to the Lamine we all know and love, but, you know, would you rather have him firing on all cylinders in August or when it comes to crunch time?
No, absolutely. And I think that's such an important point because, look, we sort of spoke about this last season as well. He played through pubalgia, which is such a difficult injury to overcome, and he did so, and he peaked at the perfect time last year. I think he was unbelievable from sort of November, December onwards. And then, of course, he picked up that other injury and it sort of, you know, set things back a little bit. But at the end of the day, I have absolutely no problems with Lamine. And I know that when it comes to it, once he's 100%, he's going to be back looking like the best football in the world. And for me, it's just a non-issue. But what is a little bit of an issue, and I think we will probably end with this, is the fact that we have 10 days left in the window, mate, and I want your take on this. We have a saga going on with Alejandro Balde. We don't know if he's staying or leaving, or if Flick wants him to stay, or if he wants to leave. There's so much going on there. We've got a saga with Julian Alvarez, who, by the way, right now, there's just a report that's been broken that Atletico Madrid are having an emergency meeting to decide on what to do with Julian. Of course, all very, very dramatic. And then we also have very strong links to Barcelona signing a centre-back. We've been linked strongly to Lukiba from Leipzig, and also a left-back, which is Jorge Salanes from Racing. Now, I know that's a lot to take in, so let's begin with Balde. What do you see happening here, and what do you hope happens here? Do you think that Balde perhaps is stagnated a little bit? Do you think there are concerns over his attitude? And most importantly, do you think Barcelona should take a good deal, let's say 60 million euros, or do you think, you know, he's one of our own, this club is built around La Masia, our La Masia core? Do you think it's important to continue working on him and continue helping him improve as a footballer?
I think it's true that maybe Baldi has rested on his laurels. He's been in the first team since the Koeman era, so like five years. He didn't really have much. Obviously, he ended up, you know, dislodging and phasing out Jordi Alba, club legend from the first 11, and he was there ever since. So I think maybe having a lack of competition over those years maybe allowed him to get a little bit comfortable, and then Cancelo came in for the second of his loan spells at the end of January. And he had some, you know, some genuine competition, and he also had an injury himself, which by that time Cancelo had really nailed down left back, and it was, you know, difficult for Baldi to get that spot back. But I just feel that at 22 years of age, Flick has said things, especially on Saturday at the pre-match press conference, which seemed to hint or suggest that his attitude, his lack of commitment in training, maybe not training hard enough to show that he really wants that spot. Flick's, you know, suggested these kind of things, and we're not privy to what goes on behind closed doors at Juan Gamper CT, or, you know, journalists are not allowed to watch all the training session when they're invited to it. We're also not privy to the finances of things. So I think it might not just be about, you know, his attitude, his commitment, and maybe having some other options in Cancelo, in Jordi Pesquera, and maybe, like you said, Salinas, another left back coming in. I think it also might be there might be a financial issue in the fact that being from La Masia, any sale of Baldi or any other La Masia, you know, academy graduate for that matter, their sale represents pure profit for Barca. It's not a player that they might still be, you know, paying installments off. Maybe someone like Koundé, or, you know, Rafinha's not going to be sold anytime soon, but Rafinha, for example, with Leeds United. So I think pursuing other targets, whether it is another nine, whether it's Julian, whether it's, you know, centre back, a left back,
yeah,
I think there's a lot of it in that as well. But we also saw Flick after the Elche match, one of many comments made in his post-match interview, say that, you know, I've not told him to leave the club, that it's, again, you know, he suggested that it's a commitment issue, it's about showing him that he wants to play, that his head might not be in the right place at the moment, and he's given him a few days to, you know, sort his head out, basically.
Yeah, and I also think with Balde, commitment is something that I think is a non-negotiable for Flick anyway. And I think if I sort of had to read between the lines, it's maybe a combination of Flick thinking Balde perhaps isn't the most committed maybe in training otherwise, but also the fact that, of course, the club see him as a saleable asset. And as you say, it's so important that it would be pure profit. This is a signing that would generate a sale, sorry, that would generate a lot of financial fair play room. And between Cancelo and now, we've seen Xavi Aspas do a really good job at left back, and perhaps bring in someone like Salenas as well, who can come in and who's been a very promising left back that Barcelona have been linked to for a long time. Now, maybe they think that selling Balde could then lend them the ability to go out then and sign or upgrade the squad in a bunch of different positions, which we'll have to see. My only concern here is, mate, that I don't think this is a matter for the end of August with less than 10 days left in the window. If the club had a vision of what they think Balde is, what he can be, and what they could do with that money, I just think this is something you should have looked at the start of July, where you could have sold him, where you could have looked at alternatives, where everything wasn't so rushed. Now we're in a situation where there's an emergency meeting, you know, we're talking to his agent, Jorge Mendes, and there's so much uncertainty around who's coming in for him, what the transfer fee will be. It's just a very high profile transfer for this late in the window, and I think the club could have managed that aspect of it a little bit better.
Yeah, they could have, and I do get the feeling that it is a bit rushed, like you say, and they've got to. We don't know what's going on with Manchester United, who seem to be, you know, the Premier League club that's most interested in taking him away. And I just feel that with his age and the fact he's from La Masia and his potential, and if Flick can motivate him, or if he takes this, you know, axing from the squad list for Elche and these few days off as, you know, motivation, and it, you know, they give him hunger to, you know, pull his socks up, then I think he deserves another season at least, especially if we're going to be left short-staffed at that position.
I tell you, I was also talking to a good friend of mine online, a very big Barcelona fan, and he was telling me, he said, look, if the club really want to sell him, Flick coming out in that press conference and being so candid and talking about attitude and commitment probably isn't the best idea from a negotiating perspective. So I'm not sure if the whole leaving him out was a 100% sign or telltale sign that he is being sold, or if it was Flick sort of giving him a bit of a reality check in and hoping for a response. I personally hope it's the latter.
Yeah, because he didn't say that exactly, but somebody asked him about Rooney before he got injured and Casado and leaving them out of the squad list. And I think, I can't remember the question that he was asked by a journalist word for word, but I think it was along the lines of, you know, are they going to leave if you told them that, you know, they haven't got a future? And they didn't say like explicitly, but maybe it's a bit, you know, cleverer than that to say, yeah, I've told them to leave. But he framed his answer in a way that said, yeah, look, I've told them the situation. And he made it sort of clear, as clearly as he could without, you know, putting his foot in it, that conversation's been had. Whereas again, he said explicitly last night, no, I've not told him to leave. I've just told him, you know, to get his head right.
No, I think that's exactly it. And today and the next few days are going to be very important to see what happens with Balde. I think whatever happens, it is always a little bit sad to see a young sort of La Masia prospect who's been so good for so long, won multiple titles as a starter, leave the club. So we're going to have to follow that very closely, and hopefully by the next episode of this podcast, we'll have a clearer idea of things. Lastly, of course, is the striker situation. Look, personally, we spoke about perhaps not needing a striker with Rafinha around, but everything we've heard from Deco and Flick suggests that Barcelona are going all out for a striker. I don't think they've given up on Julián yet. I assume they've also got alternatives. Just lastly, mate, to end this, what is your perspective on the Julián saga? Because we know this has been going on for a long time. Yesterday, in Atletico Madrid's game against Villarreal, it was frankly a brutal reception for Alvarez. The fans could not stop booing his name loudly, unanimously after the game. All the players went to essentially thank the fans, as they do, the home fans, but Atletico's staff sort of escorted Julián off because, you know, there was just too much hostility, and, you know, the cameras panned to him walking off alone. For me personally, when the situation gets so toxic, when a player's publicly come out and said that he wants to leave, when the fans are so against him, I don't see how it can continue. Personally, I think we've seen so many examples of this where eventually a move is just forced. However, what's rare about this saga is the fact that Atletico have come out so candidly, so brazenly, to essentially attack Barcelona publicly and talk about how there is no way that they will sell Julián to Barcelona. And I think that's what this has now become. It's gone from Atletico saying he will not be sold to he will not be sold to Barcelona, at least privately. I think they would probably hope that he agrees to join Arsenal or whoever else is coming in, and they get a good fee for him, and you know, it's over. But with Barcelona, I think this has become an ego thing, and they just do not want to sell him to Barcelona. Now, obviously, the biggest caveat here is everything we've heard from reliable reports suggests that Julián only wants to join Barcelona. So it's really a bit of a standoff now between three parties and a bit of a poker game. And I have no idea how this ends personally.
It's a mess, and it's really petty, I think, on Atletico's behalf. As you mentioned, there were some strong reports at the weekend. It seemed that they were basically trying to offload him on Arsenal, and he doesn't want to go to Arsenal. I think Julian's got to shoulder some of the blame himself. I mean, he's 26, is he now? He's not a baby anymore. So, you know, he's got to put his big boy pants on and take a stance. And he said at the World Cup, I think it was after a group match with Austria, when he said, he didn't mention, again, you know, players and managers are really clever in not mentioning certain clubs or things or stating things explicitly when, you know, it could get them in bother. But he did say it was his dream, he was going to fulfill a dream, and it was pretty obvious that that was Barca. And he said that, you know, there'd be some serious talks when he got back from the World Cup, and he could have taken more of a stance in a lot less volatile circumstances. We saw that with Lewandowski and Bayern in 2022, and then a really strong example when it did, you know, get maybe a bit messy was with Alexander Isak when he fought his move to Liverpool. Players have got to take a stance, I think. They can't just rely on the agents or, you know, goodwill of the club. It's evident that he doesn't want to be there, and now that the fans don't want him to be there either. So I think there's time to work something out, but it is dragging on. I think the price has got to be right as well for Barca. We don't know how much money, you know, Deco and Laporte have got at their disposal to play with. Again, I think something like these sales with Casado, Hector Fort, Baldi, they could factor in when, you know, when raising whatever's required to get a deal for Julian over the line.
I mean, yeah, I completely agree. And what I will say as well is I think once Julian made that decision of the World Cup to go public and talk about leaving, I think then you have to commit to it and you have to continue putting pressure in public. I don't understand sort of his mentality to sulk and to not be very happy, and but also to then go to the training sessions, play the games. I think you have to commit to one stance. And if he is indeed going to training and playing games, I think he should probably just kind of put it to bed and get his act together a little bit. So I don't know. I just think after you go public, it's a little bit strange to then go back. We saw, for example, a very similar situation last season with Isak in Liverpool. He was a player who desperately wanted to leave. You know, he spoke about promises being broken. He went on strike. He went on to Instagram or social media. And I think the reality is, as ugly as that would be, that is what this situation requires if Julian is only Barcelona or nothing, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's going to be a lost season if he stays at Atletico. I think, you know, as a potentially world-class player, if not already, you know, but he still will have moments of magic. I think just doing his job for Atleti. But again, he doesn't want to be there. Now the fans, it appears, they don't want him to be there either. They see him as a traitor. So he has got time on his side, I'd say, at 26. But again, you know, he's not a rookie. He's not a baby. Wasting a season at 26, 27, it's not ideal.
Yeah, completely agree, mate. And that's probably a good way to cut this off. Hopefully by next week, the next podcast, we have all our answers about Julian and this entire situation. Just before we go, what's on your schedule? What games are you going to next?
Yeah, I'll be at Barca Athletic Club on Thursday.
Oh, wow.
And that's exciting. On Monday.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. And you'll find all the coverage for those games on the 1899. We should also mention that we are so grateful for all the support. It's been incredible. We didn't expect it. And we're going to keep putting out the content and the podcasts and the newsletters. And hopefully you guys really, really continue to enjoy it. Thanks, guys. Thank you for watching. And from me and my Tom, until next time. Cheers.
Thank you.